You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 3rd of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I have a new microphone, so I sound even more incredible than normal.
Excellent.
So I hope you can handle it.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Yes, you are sounding very good. I thought the last microphone you had was good, but this one is so much better, and hopefully listeners will appreciate the improvement. But we've got some really interesting stuff to be getting into today. We're going to be talking about the real reasons for America's land grab in Syria. And of course, we're also going to go into a little bit of the history of this as well. And this actually comes from an article written by somebody called Steve Chovanac from Global Research. And I must say, Matt, it's a very good, well done finding this, because it does cover all the bases, basically. So we'll go through each part of this article, and we'll break it down, and we'll get your opinions on it as well. Years of US support to Al-Qaeda and ISIS and efforts to effect regime change in the country have culminated in the theft of Syria's oil. But is that really America's coup de grace in Syria? Near the end of July, one of the most important recent developments in US foreign policy was quietly disclosed during a US Senate hearing. Not surprisingly, hardly anybody talked about it, and most are still completely unaware that it happened. Answering questions from Senator Lindsey Graham, Secretary of State Pompeo confirmed that the State Department had awarded an American company, Delta Crescent Energy, with a contract to begin extracting oil in northeast Syria. The area is nominally controlled by the Kurds, yet their military force, the Syrian Democratic Forces, was formed under US auspices and relies on an American military presence to secure its territory. That military presence will now be charged with protecting an American firm from the government of the country that it is operating within. Matt, this is basically a land grab, isn't it? Nobody invited America into Syria. Nobody said that America could have this oil. The Syrian government haven't said that Delta Crescent Energy can begin drilling for oil in northern Syria. Why isn't this completely against the law? Surely this is just out and out theft, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure what law it would be against. I mean, international law doesn't mean anything. It's just, you know, passed by the most powerful people. I don't know why there's not more media at these Senate hearings. I mean, that's where the bulk of the information gets released. And of course, this is always for private interests, because there's not a giant difference between a place like Delta Crescent Energy and American foreign policy. The state and these companies are one and the same. And I think one of the reasons that the U.S. has to be there is because these groups, the various ethnic groups in so-called Kurdistan are often at each other's throats. And remember, the Kurdish groups are all officially Marxists, some Maoists, some Leninists, and they make a good chunk of their money either by drugs or capitalist businesses outside of the country. So the Marxism is symbolic at best, but the U.S. has no problem with that. This is part of the reason while you have people like Noam Chomsky talking about how great it is that the U.S. and the U.S. should, in fact, be intervening more in the area. You know, you scratch an anarchist, there's a neocon underneath.
Well, this is rather like America coming into Scotland and saying, oh, we need to secure this area for the Highlanders, and we're just going to sell off some of the oil here to a private contractor as well. It's just unbelievable. You would imagine that the Syrian government would be you know, shouting about this and saying, look, this is totally illegal. This is our oil. This belongs to the Syrian people. You've got no right to be selling contracts to it. You've got no right to be here in the first place. I mean, it is against, it's a act of war, basically, isn't it? America being there in Syria is an act of war in the first place. I am surprised that Assad isn't making more about this. Well, Pompeo confirmed that the plans for implanting the firm into the US-held territory are now in implementation and that they could potentially be very powerful. This is quite a momentous event, given its nature as a blatant example of neo-colonial extraction. Or as Stephen Kinzer puts it, writing for the Boston Globe, this is a vivid throwback to earlier imperial eras when conquerors felt free to loot the resources of any territory they could capture and subdue. I mean, it is basically exactly what went on in the past going on today. Indeed, the history of how the US came to be in a position to capture and subdue these resources is a sordid yet informative tale that by itself arguably even rivals other such colonial adventures. Syria had maintained itself outside of the orbit of US influence and had frustratingly prevented American corporations from penetrating its economy to access its markets and resources. As the foremost academic expert on Middle East affairs, Christopher Davidson wrote in his seminal work, Shadow Wars, The Secret Struggle for the Middle East, discussing both Syria and Libya's strategic importance, quote, the fact remained that these two regimes, sitting aside vast natural resources and in command of key ports, rivers and borders, were still significant obstacles that had long frustrated the ambitions of Western governments and their constituent corporations to gain greater access. With Syria, Davidson wrote, having long proven antagonistic to Western interests, a golden opportunity had presented itself in 2011 to oust this administration once and for all under the pretext of humanitarian and even democratic causes. Now, just let us know, Matt, how good was the economy in Syria before this civil war took off? Because I thought they were in pretty good place, actually, and that was without having any help from the West. That was without being a part of the Western economic structure. Can you just let us know a little bit what Syria was like back then before this war took place?
Every country that the U.S. has intervened against over there, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, were all on the cusp of first world status. Syria had been going through a series of market reforms, but market reforms controlled by the state. The central bank is controlled by the state. The currency has always been very solid. I wrote in 1991 that that Hafez al-Assad at the time broke the back of the oligarchs in Syria and had a massive program of land reform. But you can't break oligarchy and invite the U.S. in at the same time because oligarchy depends abroad on American support. I knew that family was with us from the very beginning. So that's the key issue. They were growing pretty substantially. Oil is only a minuscule part of the economy. But industry was growing substantially, including high-tech stuff, because Syria is allied with Iran, and Iran is now a very advanced first-world country that were growing even faster. And that goes with Chinese investment and Russian investment. It was going to be one of the central economies of the area. This is why Israel demanded that the U.S. intervene, and the media blew up these anti-government protests from years ago, way beyond what they actually were. So now they've been thrown back to third world status, and that suits Israel just fine. So the American presence in this part of the world isn't so much to extract oil, but to have Americans there. So if there's any violence against them, if there's any attempt to remove them, the U.S. can say we're under attack, and therefore we can commit more soldiers to the area. It would be an excuse. It's a way to provoke them into doing something. Then when they do it, they can say, well, we're justified in starting a war over there.
The oil is just a cover story, isn't it? I mean, people that don't really know much about this think that they're being very clever by saying, oh, it's all about oil. They're just going in there for the oil. But it's not the oil. It was the economy. And it's like, if the oligarchs can't have it, then they're going to destroy it so that nobody can have it if they can't benefit from it. It's rather like that same mentality that we see in the Middle East of, if I can't have this woman, then I'll spoil her with an acid attack so that nobody will want this woman. And it seems to me that it's this same mentality. Syria didn't want to be a part of the globalist system, so the globalist system decided that they would destroy Syria. Well, let's have a look at how this was done. The United States therefore began organizing and overseeing a militarization of the Syrian uprising early on, and soon co-opted the movement along with allied states Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Qatar. Writing at the end of 2011, Columbia University's Joseph Massad explained how there was no longer any doubt that the Syrian popular struggle for democracy has already been hijacked, given that the Arab League and imperial powers have taken over and assumed the leadership of their struggle. According to the DIA and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, by 2013, there was no viable moderate opposition to Assad, and the US was arming extremists. Investigative journalist Seymour Hersh revealed that although many in the American intelligence community were aware that the Syrian opposition was dominated by extremists, still the CIA-sponsored weapons kept coming. When ISIS split off from Al-Qaeda and formed its own caliphate, the US continued pumping money and weapons into the insurgency, even though it was known that this aid was going into the hands of ISIS and other jihadists. US allies directly supported ISIS. And that's the origin of the claim that ISIS were funded and formed by the US. But there were lots of other instances as well. We saw these ISIS fighters, they were being taken into Israeli hospitals. We saw that parts of Syria where ISIS wanted to take over were being bombed. Places were being bombed so that ISIS could escape. We saw them actually flooding into Syria through Turkey. And we saw these slave markets that were being actually held on Turkish land where these ISIS fighters were selling the women that they had kidnapped. Do you want to go into some more of the proof that America was working alongside ISIS here, Matt?
Well, I was the very first one to make this argument. It was a fairly easy argument to make since they never seemed to attack any American allies, whether Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Israel, even though they claim that they're enemies. The whole point of the U.S. condemnation of Russia and Syria is that they actually were crushing the American-sponsored ISIS movement. You can't have an army that large that springs up from out of absolutely nowhere with standardized equipment, with a full-fledged bureaucracy, even their own currency. My God, they had oil tankers in a part of the world where every penny coming in and out of there is being monitored by the CIA or Mossad and everybody else. That's simply not possible. Therefore, by definition, it has to be American-sponsored. They always serve American interests. Wherever the U.S. needs them, they show up. And you can't fight an advanced army like the Syrian Arab Army years ago to a standstill unless you have standardized equipment. And this wasn't a guerrilla battle. These were two regular forces clashing. And anytime the Russians would hit them hard, the U.S. would condemn them. And the Russians stopped using American coordinates because American coordinates were deliberately deceptive. And that was the whole point. You know, the U.S. doesn't export oil from that part of the world. In fact, the U.S. itself exports oil. So, you know, it's never been about that, whether it be Iran or anything else. Oil is a way, an excuse for people to avoid saying the word Israel. And it should be said that Israel also supports the Kurds. And this is one of the reasons that Turkey is slowly but surely turning on them, despite the fact that you can never quite predict what Erdogan is going to do. The U.S. has supported Islamic extremists in Chechnya, in Bosnia, in Kosovo. There's nothing new here. And they always serve American interests. Essentially, ISIS is the U.S. bodyguard here. And if soldiers are removed, as Trump's promised to do, then they have their own proxies to take care of business there anyway. But you can't fight the SAA to a standstill and not be fully formed and supported and trained by the West.
We also had a large influx from Libya as well after they put paid to Gaddafi and they had all these weapons and all these fighters. It was a simple matter to travel through Egypt and get into the Middle East and head on up through into Syria. So you had like a pincer movement. You had groups coming in through Turkey and you had groups coming in from Saudi Arabia as well. Saudi Arabia were offering, freedom to people that were in prison if they would go and fight in Syria. And there were also people leaving from Britain. They were paying people in Britain. They were offering in the mosques in Britain if people wanted to go out and fight in Syria. That was perfectly fine. I remember the British government were actually behind this as well. They were encouraging this. People were going out there thinking that they were doing this with the backing of the British government. It wasn't until later on that they then got portrayed as ISIS when it finally became known what was being done out there. And then these people that had been sent out there realized that they weren't actually going to be able to come back to Britain. But I can remember when it was, you know, it was implied that this was actually supported and that this was a good fight that Britain's Muslims should be supporting going out to Syria. It's just unbelievable when you look at how it ended up. And as I say, that was the origin of the claim that ISIS were funded and formed by the US. Well, US officials admitted that they saw the rise of ISIS as a beneficial development that could help pressure Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to give in to America's demands. Leaked audio of then Secretary of State John Kerry revealed that, quote, "We were watching and we knew that this ISIS was growing. We saw that Daesh was growing in strength and we thought Assad was threatened. We thought, however, we could probably manage that Assad would then negotiate." Close quote. As ISIS was bearing down on the capital city of Damascus, the US was pressuring Assad to step down and make way for a US-approved government. Then, however, Russia intervened with its air force to prevent an ISIS takeover of the country and shifted the balance of forces against the jihadist group, and ISIS's viability as a tool to pressure the government was spent. But that wasn't it, was it, Matt? They still wanted to make more use of ISIS, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it's incorrect to say that somehow Syria by itself was losing, and if Russia didn't intervene, they would have been taken over. That's not true. Actually, they were doing fairly well, but the predictions at the time was that it would end up being a standstill because of the weapons pouring in from Turkey and Israel. So their plan using these people against Assad failed. And of course, it wasn't just ISIS either. There were a number of groups that the U.S. had formed. The rallies in favor of Assad were always far larger than those against. And when you say U.S. approved government, it means a government that's going to permit tons of foreign investment taking over the industry that's there, the IT sector that's there, and then neutralizing, of course, the main threat to Israel after Iraq used to be in the area. And of course, importantly, crushing a emerging first world country back into the fourth world where it can be no threat to anybody.
Well, they even had a Syrian government in waiting, didn't they? They had it all set up. There was going to be this Syrian government that was meeting up with other diplomats in France and in Turkey. That all fell apart. The same as they had a Libyan government in waiting, ready to put in place once they'd got rid of the legitimate approved government that was voted into place by the people. I mean, it gets me. They talk about bringing democracy to Syria. Syria has a democracy. The people vote for who they want to be in power. They voted for a change in the constitution. Even while this war was going on, they were still holding elections and Assad was still winning 70-80% of the vote. I mean, he has masses of support among his people. The guy was not expecting to be the leader of the country. He was an eye doctor. He's an optician. He's somebody that had devoted his life to helping people. And he's now portrayed as this butcher, this Bashar al-Assad, the butcher. And it's a total falsity. If that was true, then the people would not have been behind him and he would have lost. And he didn't. Well, they found a new use for the ISIS threat. A new strategy was implemented. Instead of allowing Russia and Syria to take back the territories that ISIS captured throughout the war, the US would now use the ISIS threat as an excuse to take those territories before Russia and Syria were able to. Like an arsonist who comes to put out the fire, the United States would now charge itself with the task of stamping out the Islamist scourge and thereby legitimize its own seizure of Syrian land. The US partnered with the Kurdish militias, who acted as their boots on the ground in this endeavor, and supported them with airstrikes. The strategy of how these areas were taken was very specific. It was designed primarily to allow ISIS to escape and redirect itself back into the fight against Syria and Russia. This was done through leaving an escape route for militants, or through deals that were made where ISIS voluntarily agreed to cede its territory. The militants were then able to escape and go wreak havoc against America's enemies in Syria. And these escape routes that they had, I'm guessing that those were probably the humanitarian corridors. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is why the U.S. was feeding false information to the Russian Air Force at first. Because even the Russians at the very beginning were convinced that even though you had the Russian military saying ISIS is an American creation, they believed, or at least they were using American coordinates to confirm their own. When they realized that wasn't the case, they stopped using them. These humanitarian corridors was exactly that. What kind of an enemy cedes its territory back to its alleged tormentor? And the fact that no American journalist can ask these very simple questions about how a group like this could even exist under the circumstances. That the U.S., I think it was Pompeo who said that Russia is treating Syria like its own backyard. Can you imagine? Here they are colonizing an entire Syria. And then they have, it always seems to be projection. They're projecting their worst vices onto whoever their enemies are at the time. But it is true about the Kurdish militias. They've been romanticized beyond belief in the West. Their leadership as, a libertarian socialist is what they're being called, utopians. And this is one of the reasons that people like Chomsky want American intervention in their favor. They think this is going to be a new experiment in feminism and everything else in Kurdistan. It's all utter nonsense. I don't know if you ever noticed, but every one of the pictures of the Kurdish female battalions, every single woman is attractive. Now, I'm pretty sure they're fat and pockmarked women over there, but apparently they don't join the army. Not to mention the fact that they never show the Syrian female units as well. So, but while the males are leaving the country and invading Europe, the females seem to be taking up arms. So it's clear, blatant propaganda, and it's so poorly done that any fool can see it. So that really shows you that the American media is a part of it. It's part of the whole procedure.
Russia has every right to treat Syria like its own backyard. Russia was invited in there. Syria invited Russia in as guests to help them fight against ISIS. America was never invited in there. And I have to say, RT have done a good job of covering the Syrian war and also the problems in Libya. And part of that is probably because they wanted to show up American mistakes in these countries. But at least you do get the other opinion on this war looking at RT, because you're certainly not going to hear these questions asked, as you say, Matt, by the mainstream media. Well, interestingly, in terms of the oil fields now being handed off to an American corporation, the United States barely even fought ISIS to gain control over them. ISIS simply handed them over. Syria and Russia were quickly closing in on the then ISIS-controlled oil fields, so the US oversaw a deal between the Kurds and ISIS to give up control of the city. According to veteran Middle East war correspondent Elijah Magnier, US-backed forces advanced in northeastern areas under ISIS control with little or no military engagement. ISIS pulled out from more than 28 villages and oil and gas fields east of the Euphrates River, surrendering these to the Kurdish US forces following an understanding these reached with the terrorist group. The rationale behind this occupation was best described by Syrian expert Joshua Landis, who wrote that the areas of northern Syria under control of the Kurds are the US main instrument in gaining leverage over the government. By denying Damascus access to North Syria and controlling half of Syria's energy resources, the US will be able to keep Syria poor and under-resourced. So by promoting Kurdish nationalism in Syria, the US hopes to deny Iran and Russia the fruits of their victory, while keeping Damascus weak and divided. This serving no purpose other than to stop trade and to beggar Assad and keep Syria divided, weak and poor. So I guess what they're saying there is so that Syria doesn't become a competitor for the American allied countries. Is that correct, Matt?
Well, that's exactly right. When I would my classes in the Middle East that I taught the universities, I use Joshua Landis all the time, and he's pretty good about some of these things. Elijah Magnier is you don't really hear from him very much because they don't really have a lot of foreign correspondents. American journalists and any military engagement are embedded within the military units themselves, as I've said many times. And so that means everything they write gets censored by the commanders on the ground, and then it goes to the Pentagon, and that goes to their editor, and then it goes into the paper. So what you're getting is utter nonsense. But he's one of the few, Landis is one of the few people who has figured it out. But what kind of, if anyone needs proof that ISIS is the creation, the ally of the U.S., they hand their land right over to the Americans to put up oil wells or to take over oil wells. And even there, you won't get American journalists asking these very simple questions. They're clearly allies. They're clearly working together. And yet both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill, you don't hear anything like this. They actually believe that they're fighting the Islamic State.
Well, we have more proof of this in the fact that it's such a tiny amount of oil that is involved. This is the history by which an American firm was able to secure a contract to extract oil within the sovereign state of Syria. And while the actual resources gained will not be of much value, Syria only has about 0.1% of the world's oil reserves, the presence of an American company will likely serve as a justification to maintain a US military presence in the region. It is a fiendishly clever maneuver aimed at anchoring American troops in Syria for a long time, Stephen Kinzer explains, one that will aid the policymakers who hold the view that the United States must remain militarily dominant in the Middle East. This analysis corroborates the extensive scholarship of people like Mason Gaffney, Professor of Economics Emeritus at the University of California, who, writing in the American Journal of Economics and Sociology, sums up his thesis that throughout its history, US military spending has been largely devoted to protecting the overseas assets of multinational corporations that are based in the United States. The US military provides its services by supporting compliant political leaders in developing countries and by punishing or deposing regimes that threaten the interests of US-based corporations. Got any more comments on that, Matt, before we move into Saudi Arabia here?
Well, you know, and cows go moo. You know, that's not exactly going out on a limb. He's writing this as if this is revelation. Well, of course, that's the reason why the US military does anything. It's a privatized system, and a country is tyrannically ruled or not based on the extent to which multinationals based in the U.S. are allowed to invest there and take over. That's exactly what this is all about. Syria is not oil rich, but Americans, including American policymakers, are usually so dumb about it that they just figure, well, it's Arab, it's in the Middle East, therefore they have tons of oil, having no idea that's not the case. So a lot of this depends on American ignorance for it to even be believed, even slightly.
Well, as I said, they're now moving Saudi troops in there into Syria. 20 Saudi soldiers arrived this week at a U.S. military base close to an oil field in northeastern Syria, according to Iranian media, which cite a report from a Lebanon-based Arabic language TV channel. At the end of last year, Saudi troops were also reportedly stationed near Syria's largest oil field, Al Omar, in the oil-rich Dazizor region, in which was thought to be Saudi protection for exports of Saudi oil giants Saudi Aramco. According to the report of the Arabic service of Turkish news agency Anadolu at the time, the arrival of the Saudi soldiers at Syria's biggest oil field coincided with the arrival of around 30 trucks carrying drilling and digging machinery. Incidents and altercations between the superpowers backing different sides in the Syrian conflict continue. Just this week, US soldiers were injured in a skirmish with Russian troops, two US officials told the New York Times, noting that the injuries were the result of a collision between vehicles and not gunfire. But I thought the troops were moving out of Syria. Trump told us that he was moving the troops out of Syria. And in actual fact, he's moving in Saudi troops to join the American troops that are there. What are your thoughts, Matt?
Well, that's how it goes. And don't forget, you know, they use mercenaries as well. The U.S. doesn't have the men, the money, the material, the morale, or even the record to build up forces in the Middle East. So it's going to have to use proxies. And it could be the Kurds. It could be ISIS. It could be the Saudis. It could be anyone. The Saudis went from, you know, being fairly anti-Israel now to making peace with them in a fairly short period of time. And the result of that, of course, is that they're now flooded with American weapons that they couldn't get before, without any problem, including without any problem from the Israeli lobby. And remember, you know, this guy should know this, but Aramco, despite it formally being under Saudi control, the entire board of directors, which I've been through on this show, yeah, they have Arabic names, but they're all educated in America. They all speak English without an accent. So it is an American firm. It's you know, it is an American colony. And you know, by giving it a having people with Arabic names running it doesn't mean that it's actually run by Arabs. These are all essentially Americans. And you know, Saudi Arabia has no shortage of oil. So why it's spending all this time, you know, bringing people in to pump the little bit of oil that's there, again, also means that this is a political and military thing, as well as a way to protect Israel, not really an economic one, in the sense that it's not really about oil. Never has been.
Well, after a surprise announcement of pulling the US troops out of Syria in October last year, US President Donald Trump said that the United States would protect Syrian oil fields from ISIS, as if Bashar al-Assad can't protect his own oil fields from ISIS. President Trump claimed that the US had taken control of the oil in the Middle East, tweeting that the US has secured the oil and the ISIS fighters are double secured by Kurds and Turkey. The president did not elaborate on what he meant by securing the oil, but speculations about the president's statement assume he was referring to the US special forces that have been and will continue to be in control of oil and gas fields in Deir ez-Zor, Syria's oil region. President Trump has vowed to protect Syrian oil fields from ISIS, and the United States may leave 500 troops in northeastern Syria and send in battle tanks and other equipment with the purpose to help the Kurds in the area to protect oil fields that used to be controlled by Islamic State during its so-called caliphate in parts of Iraq and Syria. What are your final thoughts on this, Matt?
I don't know if really Donald Trump even believes this himself. I mean, foreign policy has been the weakest part of his presidency. Everything he does is about defending Israel, despite the fact that it does a lot of damage to the U.S. The U.S. could leave 20 troops in northeastern Syria. The point is to allow a target that if one of them is killed, that's it. War is declared. But to think that they're going to defend these oil fields from ISIS, despite the fact that ISIS gave them to the U.S. in the first place, and no journalist asked these questions, it's just depressing.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.